We are back with the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast today, talking about winning culture and building a winning culture. Here to help us and give us insight, Louisville women's basketball head coach Jeff Walls, the winningest coach in the history of the Cardinals program. Okay, here we go.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner with your host, Dallin Cuff.
What's up, folks? Got a great guest today. Jeff Walls, the head women's basketball coach at Louisville. He's the winningest coach in Louisville's history. Came there in 2007. He's gotten to four Final Fours, two national championship games. We touch on everything about where it was then when he built the program, what it is now, and a very different ecosystem in college basketball. Coach, thanks so much for your time. Always good chat with you. Coming off another outstanding season, your fourth Final Four as the head coach at Louisville. I've asked the same question to Brenda Free as we started last week, and who had us is a great coach of Maryland's, had an outstanding career. Is there anything you learned from this past year that will apply to how you coach and for your staff as you move forward with the program you've already built? It's such a high level, but anything you've learned from this past year?
Well, I think every year is a learning experience. Just adjusting, you know, to the time constraints that are put on you at times with our limited hours that you're able to work with the student athletes, at the same time trying to maximize everything you're doing. You know, you're getting to an age now where players want to be in the gym. I mean, it's really, it's something else. They want to come in and shoot extra. They want to work on their craft, and you're still bound up the number of hours you're allowed to do that for. So we've really done a pretty good job of making sure we map out month by month. Okay, here's going to be our days off. Here's the amount of practice time we're going to try to do, which then gives our players extra time to get in the gym, to shoot, and for us to rebound and work on skill work. But overall, each year possesses and presents something different. And it's just a matter of trying to go back what you've done in the past and tweak some things, make some things better, but at the same time, don't reinvent the wheel, because it's worked for us. We've been successful. Now we're just trying to continue to keep that momentum going.
You've been outstandingly successful. You are the winningest coach in Louisville women's basketball history. Let's rewind, though. When you got the job back in 07 and you come in, because what we're focused on here is building a winning culture. What were the things that you did right away to start to build that culture and to instill winning into this program?
Well, again, and I say this all the time, I was very fortunate. I did not take over a program that was not winning. You know, Tom Collin, and just go back the history of women's basketball here at Louisville's, it's pretty solid. What they hadn't been able to do was get past that first weekend of the NCAA tournament. So it wasn't a program that was just trying to get into the NCAA tournament. They had done that plenty. It was a matter of how can we get past that first weekend. So when I got the job here, I was fortunate to inherit Angel McCautry, Candace Bingham, some really talented players. We just needed to change a little bit of their mindset. You know, I can remember when I came in for my interview, I was had to sit in front of some of the players and answer their questions. And one of Angel's was, how are you going to help us get to a Sweet 16? And I'm like, Angel, I can't play. You know, so I'm not going to be able to score points. I can't rebound the basketball, defend. What are you going to do? And at that point, Tom Collin had already been at Arkansas, I think, for a week or two, and they were in the process of looking for a new coach here. You know, and I challenged, it was Candace Bingham, Angel McCautry, Patrika Barlow were the three that I talked to, that they talked to me, interviewed me, and I said, well, you've got four incoming freshmen. Have any of you reached out to them to tell them, hey, it's going to be okay? You know, we're going to get a good coach. And none of them had. And I go, that's your first problem. Where's the leadership within the program? The coach can't always be the leader. The coach can try to give you the guidance, but somebody within your program has to be willing to lead. And when I say in the program, I'm talking inside the team. And it was about a day and a half interview. And then the next day, they all come up to me and they're like, hey, we reached out to all four of the incoming freshmen. They were relieved to hear from somebody, because as much as people want to say, players go to schools because of the school. They go to the school because of the relationship they built with the coach. Mm-hmm. And then when a coach leaves, a lot of times there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of there's anxious moments as a player. And by those returning players, Angel and Candace and Patrika reaching out to those incoming freshmen, it set the tone that, okay, we're going to take control of our program. And I thought that for us was a huge first step in building the ownership from within. And then when I got the job, we were able to really sit down as a program, it's with all the players, and just explain to them, it's what are you willing to do? Uh-huh. You know, we're going to give you the guidance. We're going to do what we have to do as a coaching staff, but you've got to be willing to do the work. And then I was very fortunate and blessed to be able to hire a great staff. Tom Jurich, who hired me here at Louisville, allowed me to go out and hire veteran coaches. I wasn't, you know, when you're taking over a program, it was my first head coaching job, a lot of new responsibilities with that. I was able to hire people that had the experience. So we were able to hit the ground running, and that really helped as well.
You touched on something that, I mean, I say all the time, coaches say all the time to me, it's, you know, player-led teams are what you're looking for. It can't be the coach's voice. It's got to be the players kind of leading things. And you alluded to that with the ladies kind of taking ownership of the program. But still, they're still getting to know you as you get going that first year. How long did it take for them not just to have the ownership and leadership, but are then saying the same things that you were saying? They're echoing the same sentiments. You know they know exactly what you want and need.
Well, again, I was very fortunate that I had recruited Angel McCautry at Maryland. She's from Baltimore. She'd been on campus. So I got to know her and her family. And when I was announced as the coach and when Tom Jurich said, hey, we're going to hire Jeff Walls, when your best player is supportive of that and going, oh, my gosh, we've hired a good coach, It makes things a little bit easier. So I started off with the best player on the team in support, not questioning what have we done, who is this person. So that helped me tremendously. And then the success that we had at Maryland. I mean, it's something that you can't devalue for the fact that we had won a national championship in 2006. So the players knew, okay, hey, here's somebody coming in that knows how to win. So that really helped. And then it really took probably about a month or two of just making sure they understood how consistent we were as a staff. You know, we didn't come in one day all excited. Then the next day, you know, the energy wasn't there. I truly believe as a coaching staff, you have to be consistent. If you're consistent, then your players will become consistent. But it's something that it's not easy because every day presents a new challenge, and you've got to be willing to live up to those challenges.
How do you maintain that consistency? What are some of the key things to maintaining consistency within your program once it starts to go on the upward trajectory and you hit a certain place?
The consistency of staff has been really important for us. I've been fortunate to have Steph Norman here we're going on our 16th year together. You know, I've never lost an assistant coach to be an assistant someplace else. I've lost them to move on to be head coaches, which is the ultimate goal. And that's one thing, you know, I wanted the opportunity to be a head coach. Just about every one of my assistants wants that opportunity as well. And when I hire someone, because someone's moved on, I tell them, there's not a commitment. You don't have to make a commitment to me of I'll be here for 2 years. I'll be here for 3 years. You've got to take the opportunity when it presents itself. And if it's, you've been here for a year, we get to a Final Four, a national championship, you got to take that opportunity when it's there. And when things are going well is normally when it's going to be there. So I think the assistants I hire appreciate that. And then their willingness to come in here and work. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel, but I do like new ideas. We're going to, anytime we can tweak something or change something for the better, we will. And I think that's important too. And then we just haven't wavered how we've done things. You know, our ultimate goal obviously is to win a national championship. We haven't done that yet. But it's nothing I'm going to apologize for. We've been to four Final Fours, which yeah. I think there's only like 11 programs in the country that have done that in the history of women's basketball. So that's pretty darn impressive. Our ultimate goal, obviously, is to win the thing. But the consistency that we continue to have day in and day out, I think, is what's allowed us to sustain our success.
You just touched on something that's really, I mean, four Final Fours, that is illustrious company, two national championship game appearances. But it is Louisville, too. I mean, Louisville, that town loves their basketball. And that is a gift. But sometimes I assume could be a little bit of a curse. The expectations for you guys every year are really, really high. How do you manage expectations within your program, you know, year after year and continuing to have that high bar?
Expectations are a good thing. You know, I like the joke, if you don't have expectations, then you're probably going to get fired. Because if they don't expect you to do well, that means you've been bad. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's changed. In 15 years, we went from, you know, can you just get us to a Sweet 16? You know, we just want to get to a Sweet 16. Now, if we're not competing for a national championship or winning it, it's been a bad year. And it's fun, but at the same time, there's only one team that's going to walk away at the end of the year excited. You know, I joke about it. It's in football, you've got about 50 bowl games now. Yeah. You know, so there's 50 teams that are going to be excited at the end of the season because they won their last game. Mm-hmm. There's only one of us.
Yeah.
So it's great, though. I love it. We love the fact that our fans are so supportive. They come out. They're knowledgeable. And we've been very, very blessed. And I mean this, that we have had wonderful players, not just basketball players, but people. And they have won our town over with how they carry themselves within our community, how they give back. And because they're willing to give back, our fans are willing to come out and support us. And that's why we're normally in the top four or five in the country year in and year out in attendance.
It's funny, whenever I talk to the women that play at your opponents, they love playing in Louisville. They know it's going to be really hard, and you guys win most of those games, but they're playing in front of a lot of folks. Like that place is, the Yum Center definitely has great fan support, without a doubt. It's a great building, to say the least. We talked a lot about you kind of coming in and building the culture, but that's kind of a bygone era in all, where we're at, compared to where we're at now. So much change in college athletics and men's, women's basketball and in football in particular in the last 2 years. So as you look at building this culture now with the transfer portal, people coming and going, you're trying to bring in players, you're still trying to recruit some high school players. What has been your approach to maintaining the culture? Because this is what I've talked to a lot of coaches on both the men's and women's side. Some have just completely given up on high school. Like their focus really has become the portal and getting players out of the portal. And you've got to kind of strip away some of the habits from some of those programs. Some of those players come from losing programs, some from winning programs, some are older, younger, and they present different challenges. How have you approached kind of maintaining your culture in what we've come into kind of more of a free agency period here?
I think we're going to continue to recruit high school players. You know, we're not going to deviate from that. I think it's really important to be able to have players that are in your program for 3 or 4 years. Because if you don't, then you're not going to be able to continue to carry on the culture that we've built here for the past 15 years. You know, this past year, we add Emily Inksler and Chelsea Hall. Chelsea had never played in the NCAA tournament before. Emily had never been past the first weekend in the tournament. But because they were coming and being a part of 9 to 10 other players who had been to the Elite Eight, you know, Mikasa Robinson, she's now been to 2 Elite Eights and a Final Four, and the year was canceled when we were top 3 or 4 in the country. So when they come here as transfers, they're able to find out real quick how we do things. And when you take a talent like Chelsea and Emily, and then you insert them with Mikasa Robinson, with Haley Van Lith, Kiana Smith, who'd been with us for 3 years, they see, okay, here's how it's done here. Here's the work that's put in. It's not just the hour and a half, 2 hours of practice. They're putting in the time on their own. And because we have those players that have been here for 3 or 4 years, they're able to learn that. It is something, though, that we've talked about as a staff. Any more they talk about building a program, you're almost now building a team each year.
Yeah.
Even for us, we just added 2 new transfers from the portal. So now I've got 2 that will come in here in June that we're going to teach them, hey, here's how we do things here at Louisville. And we do look for not just good players, but good kids, because one bad transfer can ruin your entire program.
Yeah.
So we're very selective on who we bring in, and we've been very, very fortunate, again, to not just bring in good players, but good people.
This, I feel like, is one of the most challenging things, and I feel like we've brought this up in other podcasts here and have talked about with coaches a lot with this. You guys are usually recruiting players in high school for 1 or 2 years. You get to know their families, their friends, the coaches. Like, you get to know them, and you know exactly the type of person you're bringing into your program. The portal, we're talking a matter of weeks. I mean, this is compressed time, and this is like speed dating. So how are you able to vet the people you're dealing with and make sure that you get the right people into the program? Because as you said, you make a wrong choice, it can really cause some big ripples.
Well, I think the big thing is Morgan Jones, who's signed with this, she'll be a part of our program next year. We recruited her out of high school. She came up for a visit. We got to know her family. I take pride in the fact, because I've had a sister that's been through this, was National Player of the Year in 1996, and I was fortunate to still be around in that area to be able to watch when the coaches came into the house and gave their recruiting spiels. There were no cell phones back then, so it was the home phone. And, mm-hmm. you know, players only have – they're only going to make one school happy out of high school. So I've come to that conclusion of, like, I'm never going to make a kid cry. I'm never going to make a kid feel bad. Now, if they decide they're going to go someplace else, of course, when they call, which I give them a ton of respect for doing that, I just ask them, you know, is there anything we could have done differently? You know, is there anything I could have done as a coach and, you know, our program? And 99% of the time it's like, no, coach, I just got to feel that this was the place for me. Well, I wish them luck. Like, I'm not going to sit there and tell them, oh, change your mind. You're making a mistake. They're doing what they think is best for them. And I laugh because we have some kids now that have committed to us. One of our players that decided to transfer in here, you know, one of the coaches, she called and said, I'm going to Louisville. Oh, you can still change your mind. You can still, that letter, that scholarship paper you signed really doesn't hold you to them. Yeah. And I just laugh at it. I'm like, my God, that's how you recruit? Mm-hmm. You know, so I do. And I tell them this every single time. When they call and tell me they're going someplace else, I wish them the best. I ask them that question. I wish them the best. I tell them, I hope you're an All-American. I hope you have a great career. But if we play you, whatever, however many games we play you, I hope you suck that night. I hope it's the worst you've ever played. Okay, just for that night.
Yeah.
Okay, after that, I hope you're great. And they laugh.
Yeah.
And then in the term, when they go into the portal, when we're making that phone call and I'm picking the phone up and calling them, I'm not ever having to apologize. Hey, I'm sorry for making you feel bad when you decide to go to this school or that school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of these players that are going into the portal now, a lot of schools have recruited them out of high school. I am a big believer. I think in 2 years, the portal is going to slow down some.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have recruited 4 players the past 2 years out of the portal. 3 of the 4 would have never been in the portal if it wasn't for the COVID year. So I've got 3 of my 4 had actually played 4 years of college basketball, and they're just using the extra year that you receive from COVID as a 5th year. So I think there's a significant number of players who are doing that. You know, you've spent your 4 years, you've graduated, and now you just want to do something different for a year. Well, there's only two more classes that can do that. And I think once that's been exhausted, I don't think you're going to see as many in the transfer portal as you do now.
It'll be interesting to see that, as well as I do think there are already stories. The grass isn't always greener, whether that be what scholarships were available, what program you ended up playing, and then was it a good experience? So I think that'll trickle down, and some folks, younger people, will have, this is a great opportunity for them. But with that, you look back and say, did I make the right choice? And some folks will realize they didn't, and maybe they'll talk to some of their friends, and we'll see how it all plays out. I think we don't really know. What we do know is obviously you're bringing in players that are transfers, and we just talked about your high school recruiting, how important that is. Is it different or more difficult or less difficult to bring in a player that's coming from a different college program that's playing at the college level versus high school, which has never had a collegiate experience? How is that different or more easier or more difficult? I don't know.
Well, I think it's easier in ways because you already know what they've been able to do at this level. So as a transfer, you've been able to see how they've been able to handle playing at a college level. So you have a little bit of advantage from that side, from that standpoint. But it's not going to stop me from recruiting high school players. You know, I think part of the excitement of being a college coach and the joy and satisfaction of it is watching when they come in as freshmen and they're 17 to 18 years old. And then when they graduate and leave as a 22-year-old, you know, the changes that take place within their body, within their minds, mentality, maturity wise, is off the charts. And that's what's exciting about it, is you see them come in as a young adult, and then all of a sudden they're leaving as an adult.
That's pretty cool. You saying that, I had a flashback to my first like week on campus, and like that whole, I don't know why, that's the first thing that popped in my head. I was like, yeah, it's eye opening. But yeah, there's so much change in those 4 or 5 years, depending on how long you're on campus. In terms of the culture of your program, and as we go forward in this, like, is it not difficult, but are you having to recruit your current players? I hear that from coaches all the time. I have to re-recruit my players, but your culture, your winning culture, is very, very strong. Are you having to do that there just like everybody else?
Not that much. No. You know, I know how we treat our players off the court. Sure, I coach them tough. I'm going to challenge them, but I ask them. I ask all of them before each year, what's your goal? What do you want out of basketball? And I'm not talking about our team goals. I'm talking about your individual goals. And when they tell me they want to play professionally, they want to be able to do this for, you know, 5-10 years after college, then I tell them, okay, well, I know what that takes. I've had plenty of players that have done it. So when you're not doing that, I'm going to make sure that I remind you of that, because I know what your end game is. And to me, that's, you have those conversations up front, then players understand when they've had two exams and they've been up all night studying, and then they've got to come in and practice it, you know, in the afternoon. I'm not going to let them slack off. I need the best 2 hours you have. Uh-huh. And I pull it out of them. But at the same time, when they know you care about them off the court, that's all that matters. I mean, I say it all the time. Everybody asks me, you know, what was the most enjoyable moment of this past season? Most enjoyable moment for me, and one that I'll never forget, was the press room after our Michigan game, when Emily Inksler and Haley Van Lith were as genuine, as raw and uncut as they could be, talking about our program and talking about me. That meant more to me than winning that basketball game, because it just validates why I do things and how I do them. I'm not going to change. You know, I've adjusted and adapted, but I'm not going to change my core values of what's important to me and what I think is going to help them, not only as basketball players, but as people.
You just touched on something that I thought was interesting there, though, too. I mean, how have you adjusted? Because I do talk to a lot of coaches in this era. You said, bring it out of you. I'm going to bring those things out of you. That is a coach's job. And I do think people in there, I think there's a generational difference. I'm 38. And when I look back, and I, whether I talk to other people that are my age, a little bit older, when we were playing, it was expected. The coach is going to be hard on you, and the coach's job is to do everything possible to get the best out of you. And usually it's pretty difficult. Now there seems there's still the end goal is still there. The means by which to get there might have to be a little different. You said you've adjusted. How have you adjusted in terms of your interaction with players to still get the most out of them, but maybe in a different manner?
Well, I think what the Angel McCautrys, the Candace Binghams, the Monique Reeds that were here the first few years, you know, when they come back to practice, they're always like, yeah, coach, you're soft.
You're soft, yeah. Soft.
You know, so I think I've adapted more in the way of really trying hard to get to know what motivates each individual player instead of just one style motivates all, because that's just not the way it works anymore. At the same time, I'm not going to sacrifice our standards. And that's why, you know, we're not for everybody. I'm not for everybody. But I think our success on and off the basketball court shows that how we do things work. And, you know, to me, there's nothing better than now that I've been doing this for as long as I have, you get players that come back and they're like, coach, I didn't realize why you were pushing me the way you were until about 3 years after I got out of college. Well, then it still worked. You know, I've still succeeded. Not everybody understands it while it's being done. You know, but I'd say 99% appreciate it at some point in time in their life. So I've really worked hard on individualizing how we try and motivate each kid. And then at the same time, I've always done it, but you do it even more now, is building those relationships with them off the court. So they know that you truly care about them. So when you're getting on them and challenging them at practice, they know what happens at practice stays at practice. There is no doghouse. I don't have a doghouse. Like, you know, if you have a bad day, it's a bad day. Well, let's come back tomorrow and have a better day. And those are the things that I really try and preach and work on here.
I know a lot of our listeners are coaches or people in the game, primarily coaches, that I think as you're younger, it takes time, I think, to understand that if you care about them off the court, you can push them pretty much as hard as you want on the court. If the player knows that, there's that kind of like love. That's a real thing. And that matters. But you mentioned the psychology that you learned that you couldn't necessarily treat everybody the same way. Were there certain instances, stories? How did you go about that kind of evolution? Because that's an important kind of realization.
Well, it's just, you know, like you said, what did you learn this year? What are you going to take from this year and move on? And then from the conversations you just have with players, I think a lot of times as coaches, you get caught up in just the X's and O's of the game. You know, how are we going to beat our next opponent? And I've really tried to, you know, obviously we focus on that, but then at the same time when we're on road trips and we're traveling, is to grab a player or two and just talk to them and find out, hey, what motivates you? What do you like about what we do in our program? What can we change? You know, and if you truly listen to them, and I tell them, I go, all because you tell me what you would like to see change doesn't mean it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I will listen to your input. And there are some things that we have changed. You know, just simple things of like what they eat for pregame meals. You know, we're always under the assumption grilled fish, chicken, whatever. You know, it's got to be the perfect meal. And I've learned, like, we're recruiting these kids. And I'm like, man, that kid's really good. And she just had a Big Mac before they played a travel ball game, a high school game. I mean, so we've really tried to adapt with making sure we're fueling their bodies with the right things, but at the same time, making sure they're enjoying what they're eating. Yeah. So little things like that go a long way, but the one-on-one conversations that you have with your players, finding out, okay, what can we do better? What do you like that we do and what can we change, I think is very important in the success that we've had.
We touched on the portal a little bit. We just touched on, you know, the relationship with your players and how that impacts your culture from an NIL standpoint. One of the other big changes, obviously, in college basketball. How have you had to manage that at all? How has that possibly had either positive or negative effect, again, on your group?
It really has not had a negative impact on our group. I could say just about every one of our players has been approached with some type of NIL opportunity. They aren't all the same. Now, we talk about that also. Life's not fair. You know, so you might get an NIL opportunity for $100,000 and I might get one for $2,000. Life's just not fair. But it's as soon as you can realize that and accept that, then you need to try to change your fate. You know, if I'm not one that gets out in the community and really has an outgoing personality and engages with people, then I might need to change that. Because in, you know, football is football, men's basketball is men's basketball. There are going to be opportunities for women with name, image, and likeness. But I think a lot of it is going to be from, you know, what is their impact in the community that they're playing in? They're your, you know, your one or two. You've got Haley Van List, your Pages, your Caitlin Clarks, who can possibly do things on a national brand. You know, and Haley has proven that. But for the majority of them, it's going to be local. And it's going to be, you have to give back and give back without expecting to get something in return before things are going to start to come back your way. And we've had some players that have done a wonderful job in our community of going out and speaking at elementary schools and doing a lot of nonprofit work that now they're starting to see some things that have come back because of what they've done. And I just think that's, you know, really important for coaches to be able to dress with their team. That it's not all going to be the same, guys. Not everybody gets paid the same in life either.
It's funny. Whenever we were going through this initially, people were like, well, how are coaches going to manage this? There's so much inequity in a locker room already. Where you come from, what money you got, how much attention you get from whether it's men or women, whatever you want from, like, there's all these different things that are, you're managing kind of on a day-to-day basis. Anyway, this is another one, but there's kind of just more inequality within this thing. But as you said, that's kind of life. Just kind of want to wrap it up in terms of, we've touched on so much stuff. If you could give advice, cause you said you were in a fortunate situation when you came to Louisville, it wasn't a program that was downtrodden. A lot of coaches do have to take over full kind of rebuilds and kind of tear it down and rebuild it up. If you're talking to any coach that's coming into a situation that may be not as fortuitous as yours, what would you say is the key things you need to do to start to put the foundation in place to build a winning culture?
Well, I think the first thing is you have to surround yourself with good people. You have to find people that are going to have your back. This is an industry where if you don't get the right people in the trenches with you, you will not last very long. So that's the first thing that I would do. And I was very fortunate to be able to do that here. And then you've got to realize it is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You're not going to solve the world's problems in 1 week. You know, your first week on the job, you're not going to solve all the problems. And then you've got to be willing to adjust, adapt, and just kind of roll with things. You go into a season with an idea, this is how we're going to play. And then you start the season, you realize it's really not working. You've got to be willing to change it. You know, so I think having an open mind is very important when it comes to basketball. You know, I laugh, you know, everybody was talking this season about how, you know, our press was so good. You know, we pressed. We did not press until the NCAA tournament. And that's simply because the matchups that were presented to us, it was beneficial to us to press. So, you know, I think as coaches, you can't just get stuck in doing it one way. You've got to be willing to change. I think that's really important. And then in the recruiting game, understand that you're not going to get every kid you want, but don't settle for somebody who's a really good player, but you question their character. I think that's really, really important because you want to be surrounded with people, with players as well, that are going to have your back when times are tough.
Well said, Coach Walls. Appreciate your time, man. Great chatting with you, and good luck in the offseason here, which I know there is no offseason for you guys anymore. It's just nonstop work. So good luck doing your thing. We'll catch up soon. Thanks, man.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.